I'd like to call to order the March 19th, 2024 Budget and Finance Commission meeting. I'd like to welcome everybody here. Melissa, could you do roll call, please?
Commissioner LeMay? Commissioner Garland?
Here.
Commissioner Miller?
Here.
Vice Chair Carr?
Here.
Chair Mason?
Here. Okay, we'll do the Pledge of Allegiance. Looks like we don't have a call to audience, so we can press on with the staff liaison report.
Good evening, Chair, members of the commission. Just a few items for you this evening. We are full speed ahead in budget season, as you can well imagine. This is March Madness for us. But we're not playing basketball, we're playing budget. So we are full on into that. We've held departmental meetings to receive their requests. Those requests have been submitted. The town manager's, just looking forward, the town manager's recommended budget is set to be distributed by April 19th or on April 19th. We actually think it might come in a little bit sooner than that, but we'll see. April 19th is kind of our target date on the calendar. Additionally, we're holding council member one-on-ones in late April and early May. So we just wanted to make you aware of that. And then our five-year forecast is scheduled to be presented at our next Budget and Finance Commission meeting and then in April, and then also to council the day after. So a lot of work being done to kind of pull together, as you can well imagine, the town manager's recommended budget, but we're making some good headway on that front. Just kind of as a... to bring you up to speed, at the last this last council meeting, roughly 2 weeks ago, one of the items on the agenda was the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. That item was discussed, and related to budget, there was direction provided by town council. It was unanimous to actually load in about $2 million, or to load in $2 million of capacity into next year's budget for various needs related to the preserve. Those needs are actually, and that kind of gets me into tomorrow night's meeting, I believe there will be some more, potentially some more direction to staff as to what that might look like. There's an item on tomorrow night's council agenda, which is the Vistoso Trails Master Plan and Prioritization. So it's there's the possibility that there could be some additional direction given to staff at that point in time as to what that might look like, whether it's additional seeding of the vegetation of the preserve, kind of bringing it up to more of a desert type landscape, natural desert type landscape. There's also the issue with the former pond there at the preserve that has kind of been sitting unutilized. So there's some, needless to say, there's some different priorities there. And we'll see what council's appetite is or whether there's additional direction on that front. Also, tomorrow night, there's an item on the agenda dealing with the Push Ridge Golf Course Bridge. I believe it's on the seventh hole, if I'm not mistaken. That bridge has been deemed, we've had engineers come and examine that bridge. It's been deemed to be unsafe. And so there's an item on tomorrow night's agenda asking for additional resources to remedy that situation, to permanently put that bridge out of commission, and then also utilize an alternative path that would not necessarily obviously wouldn't need that bridge moving forward. For golfers to be able to play on the course. I believe there's a temporary path currently that's being utilized in lieu of that bridge. So So that's on tomorrow night's agenda. That's roughly almost $250,000, so it's not a small ticket item. And we'll see what council's appetite is or what direction they provide on that front. And then lastly, the last large item on tomorrow night's agenda as well is the Vistoso Highlands development. And there's a developer that was a part of the Vistoso Trails, or the acquisition of the Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve. There was a high density a developer acquired a piece of that preserve or property, I should say, not preserve, but a piece of the property for high density use, high density residential use. And so I believe that's on tomorrow night's agenda as well. So with that, I think that concludes my staff liaison report. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Gephardt. Melissa, could you read item number one, please?
Agenda item number one, the review and approval of the February 20th, 2024 regular session meeting minutes.
Are there any questions or comments concerning the minutes? Do I have a motion to approve?
So moved.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion to approve by Vice Commissioner Carr. And seconded by Commissioner Garland. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Melissa, could you go to item number two, please?
Agenda item number two, presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2023-2024 fiscal update through January 2024.
Who gets to do it? Just a quick question before we start. Would you rather get through your whole briefing before we ask questions or ask questions as we go?
I'm Chair Mason, members of the commission. So we don't actually have a PowerPoint because it's an off quarterly presentation. So we do still refer to the item as a presentation and possible discussion, but there's no formal PowerPoint. But we are available here at the meeting to discuss any items or questions you may have.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
I have questions.
Commissioner Garland.
Thank you. All right, a couple questions that I had was they're related to the general fund. So in the write-up, you talk about the state shared revenues are about 0.2% lower than the budget. So is that, I do know that it's made up of three pieces, right? The VLT, income tax, and sales tax. So is it just the VLT that you're seeing less amount, or, because the income tax is a known amount, and then the sales tax, I was just wondering if you're receiving more state shared sales taxes than you expected versus then is it offsetting the auto loan?
Sure. Yes, Chair Mason, Commissioner Garland. So if you want to refer to Attachment A, page 2, actually breaks down our state shared revenue sources a little bit further so you can see the year-end estimates for each. The state income tax is actually coming in a bit lower, about $60,000 below budget. So that's a little bit of the difference there. State sales tax, as you mentioned, yes, we are forecasting about $200,000 above budget for that category. Those are doing quite well. The rest of that difference is going to be your VLT or your county auto lieu. That difference is about $130,000. Of our variance there, below budget for that source. And then our smart and safe, the marijuana taxes are expected to come in slightly below budget, about $30,000 for that source.
Okay, thank you. So my next question then is, in the write-up, it does talk about a reduction in the enterprise service fee. Could you explain that? Because do you normally calculate that at budget time? And then why would you reduce it?
Chair Mason, Commissioner Garland, yes. So we actually wanted to go back and refine those estimates and kind of update those figures per our cost allocation plan. So we sharpened our pencils a bit, kind of did a deeper dive into some of their indirect and direct charges that are apportioned to the water fund primarily in this situation. And we had an adjustment as a result of that. So we did actually bring that charge out down to the water utility.
About how much?
Let me scroll down here. I think we've got those details here on attachment A. That would be in our charges for services breakdown. Yes, so the first line, attachment A, page 4, enterprise funds cost allocation, that difference there is about $250,000 that we've adjusted that down.
That's quite a bit. Okay. So then, will that revenue projection that you have built in for next fiscal year, does that assume a reduction of 250 from what you planned?
Yes, we will likely be bringing that down. It's primarily an adjustment in their direct charges, so some of their software fees that live in our IT budget based on the new software that they've brought on board and updates with what they're utilizing. That's the bulk of that difference there.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I'll just jump in there, Mr. Chair and Commissioner Garland. So during last budget season, during the budget process, we had at least, I believe, at least one, maybe a couple council members that were concerned with the increases that they were seeing on that that enterprise service charge. And so that's what kind of prompted us to, as well as our water utility director, prompted us to kind of take another look at it and see whether there was a way that we could moderate that a little bit, come to more of a balanced solution. So that's what the driving factor of that recalculation was about.
All right. Makes sense. Then my other question is on, there was a rebate, a one-time rebate from the Arizona Municipal Risk. Could you talk a little bit about that rebate, what that is, and it is a one-time revenue?
Sure, Chair Mason, Commissioner Garland, so it is considered one-time, although we have received the rebate now for, I think this might be the third fiscal year in a row, and that's based on our claims history in the pool, in the risk pool, so based on positive trends that they've seen in claims, we've received this rebate back from the Arizona Municipal Risk Retention Pool.
So is there a reason why it goes to the general fund and not the risk management fund?
Chair Mason, Commissioner Garland, so the costs for that, for our general liability insurance, primarily live in the general fund. I actually think the rebate, when we received it, I believe we apportioned some of it to the water utility fund as well, because they're the next kind of largest fund that would be paying some of those insurance costs.
All right, thank you.
You're welcome.
Just a follow on, are the departments paying the self-insurance fund those fees, or are they paying them directly to this pool?
Chair Mason, so commission members, I just want to clarify. So this was a rebate not for any sort of workers' comp-related insurance. This was our general liability insurance that we received a rebate on. But your question in regards to, can you repeat your question? You're asking about the health insurance premiums?
Well, does the self-insurance fund bill the other funds, and then the self-insurance fund pays, whether it's with the liability or the claim? Or?
Yes, that's correct, Chair Mason. That would be like our health insurance claims. That's completely separate from this general liability insurance rebate. But yes, those revenues are going into the self-insurance fund through premiums paid from the town and employees, and then the claim settlement costs are paid out of the self-insurance fund.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other questions? Just a couple. Joyce already covered a couple of them for me. You mentioned that in sales tax that the local sales tax is kind of going down, but the online sales tax are kind of going up. Are you guys having any concerns about that trend?
Chair Mason, not at this point. I mean, we budgeted conservatively on purpose, and that actually has prepared us quite well to shoulder some of this. Our construction sales tax in particular is looking quite a bit better than what we had forecasted. But the retail softening is somewhat new. I mean, we are coming off of a period of high inflation, so it may just be a result of some of that moderating a bit. It's still up year over year, but because we had budgeted conservatively with our forecast, we're in good shape and actually still forecasting an overage in local sales tax overall for the general fund.
You also mentioned that the personnel expenditures were down because of personnel vacancies. Are those being held vacant on purpose, or is it just a recruitment time?
Chair Mason, Commission members, it's probably mostly just refills, and sometimes the position may be vacant for some time before it's refilled. Sometimes we have a retirement, and the replacement comes in at a lower salary. That's probably the bulk of the savings, but some positions have been purposely kind of either reallocated or repurposed. So it's a blend, but mostly just vacancies and refills.
Thank you. And I know you've probably covered this before, but I forgot. So you say that the year-end tax support won't be required for the community. Could you explain, because I guess we're all new to here, of what that calculation is now, how you determine that?
Sure. Yeah. So our golf contractor submits revised year-end estimates to us on a regular basis. And so what we're basically looking at is their forecasts for their year-end revenues and their year-end expenditures, just from their operations perspective. After we take a look at that, then there's usually a small subsidy. But if you recall, we have agreements and contracts with some of the HOAs. And so we receive funding from those HOAs per the contracts. So in our calculation, we include that to offset the golf operating shortfall, if there is one. And then also the golf operations just through the restaurant, through sales. They generate sales tax, utilities tax, and so we take that into account as well and factor that into the projection. So based on their operating forecast, less what we receive from the HOAs and then the sales tax that we receive this year, it's a positive calculation.
Okay, thanks. And that's just the contracted revenues and the contracted expenditures. Okay?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. That's all I have. Any other questions? Okay. Thanks, Wendy. Melissa, could you go to item number 3, please?
Agenda item number 3, the review and discussion on proposed town financial and budgetary policies for fiscal year 2024-2025.
Do we just want to start at the top and work down, or?
Sure. Okay. Mr. Chair, this is, whatever your purview is, or however you want to tackle this one. But the draft policies are in your packet this evening, and we can work through the changes and hopefully address anything that you don't see that you'd like to see. So.
Okay, we might as well start off with the annual budget process.
Right. So on page 4, it looks like there are some changes there, just in terms of the definition. I think I hopefully highlighted all the changes in the memorandum for you this evening. But we did kind of redo the have some different language with the definition of the structurally balanced budget. And then one of the commissioners made the recommendation to actually define what the tentative budget was, which I thought was an excellent recommendation because it is a budget that's referenced in the policies. And so I thought, that definition, we did want to include that. I thought that was a good change to include that. Additionally, 6.0, the budget development, we kind of reworked that, not reworked it from what you saw at the last meeting, but reworked it from the current policies. I think the changes before you this evening are better, more defined, tighter, kind of really highlights what we're trying to accomplish with the budget document in terms of submitting it, preparing it based upon GFOA best practices, submitting it for the Distinguished Budget Award program, things that we kind of do as a matter of course, and really just trying to keep that in line with best practices from GFOA. So that's kind of the main change there. Any questions or comments or feedback on this policy? Hopefully I highlighted the main changes with policy 1-1, the annual budget process.
Of course, I didn't print out all the ones with the changes, but where you talk about in 6.2, you say expenditure estimates at program levels. I mean, because you basically budget at either department and major category. So do you really even have program level estimates that you, because the budget isn't organized that way?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission. So I think what my intent there was to, because we do report based upon what I consider a program level is like the major categories of like public safety, parks and recreation, courts, things like that, public works. Which is an accumulation in some cases of a number of different departments. And so I think that was in transit. So really that was really what we were trying to, or I was trying to accomplish with that. I'm open to different language there, but that was what I would consider a program, kind of broadly based what the program level would be. Obviously, some programs could be more granular than that, but we typically don't budget based upon programs or at a super granular level. It's really more broad based in how we report that in the budget. So,
is that really needed to be in there then, or should we? If you want to keep it, do you want to add a definition of what that is and maybe how it's used?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I'm open to deleting that language or defining it. Either way, I'm fine either way, whatever the perspective of the commission is.
Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
I was just going to ask, so I know you get all of your detail from the different departments. Are they giving you budget information at program level, or are they doing high level as well?
Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Carr, no, not really. It's more of how we accumulate the information and the data that they provide to us. They don't really, and it is very high level. It is not granular in any shape, fashion, or form. So we don't really get, you could consider a program like the Aquatic Center or something like that, you know, there's, which gets a little bit more granular just looking at that facility and specifically. We're not really set up to do something like that. We don't get typically get budget information at in terms of cost allocation and things of that nature, that granular. We do get detailed line by line budgets from departments, and then we aggregate that up through the budget process and report on that in the ACFR in terms of what I would consider broad based programs, but not really granular at that granular level. And we don't report on it at that granular level either. So it was really more just trying to align the budget document with, again, with how we present on it in the ACFR, but then also also the budget document itself.
So then I'm going to ask a question about this. So, but when you're reporting on the general fund, you're reporting by department level and not at this program level. So is that confusing to the readers? I'm confused.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Garland, we can change it. Yeah, I think it could be confusing. Certainly. I mean, again, I'm open to deleting it and just leaving it out, excluding that language specifically. And maybe that just because we do, you're absolutely correct. When we report on it, even in the ACFR, we report on it on our budget to actual schedules, which is required supplementary information in the general fund. We report on it on a departmental basis. Now, you do see kind of those programs underneath, or the title of the program above the department, but it is the numbers are on a department basis, so you can kind of see what information would be rolled up in terms of those programs, but it could be confusing to the reader. So yeah, I'm open to excluding the language.
Okay, thank you. Did you make the change, or did we had a discussion about the level of budgetary lowest level and at the funding level? Of course, everybody's at the fund level except the general fund. Now, at the fund level, if there's a budget transfer between funds, you have mayor and council approval. But if you do it between departments within the general fund, you don't require that. And that just doesn't seem logical to me. If you're following one level, but you're not following it for the other level that you've established. So what were your thoughts on that?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, my thoughts are that what we follow is based upon state statute. So state statute really, or local budget law in Arizona, dictates that the general fund is reported on a departmental basis. And so that is, that's why we report on it that way in the ACFR. So in terms of departmental transfers and that requiring council approval, that is not a policy that is that you see widely utilized in Arizona and across other cities and towns who have to report the same way we do. Typically, you do see almost always you do see a contingency reallocation or a transfer across funds requiring council or board approval, depending on the organization. But typically, you don't see transfers between departments requiring board or council authorization. That is not a policy that's widely utilized across cities and towns in the state. With that said, additionally, I would say that typically we don't transfer resources. I mean, that's rarely, I think only once since I've been here in the last 4 years, have we ever transferred from one department to another. And that transfer actually occurred this past year, where we transferred money that was dedicated for the implementation of the new pay plan for the town. We didn't know exactly how that was all going to flush out. And so we budgeted kind of a bulk dollar amount in general administration. And then when we kind of figured out what all the changes were going to be and what that looked like, there was a transfer that was made at the end of last fiscal year from general administration, reallocating those resources across various departments for pay and compensation. So so that's, typically we don't transfer resources from, from the police department to public works, or from parks to transit. I mean, we typically don't do that. Now, that's not to say that it couldn't happen in the future. It's just not a normal process that we utilize. And then, additionally, we have a transfers in and transfers out line when we move funds from one fund to the other. So that's all documented and tracked, and it's reported in the notes to the financial statements. There's not a similar mechanism moving money from one department to another. There's not a transfer in from a department and a transfer out to another department. It's just moving budget capacity. So it is different. And my recommendation would be to not take that before council. I'm not sure that council necessarily wants to see that, but But if they did, they certainly could opine on that when the policy goes before them for approval. So,
I mean, couldn't you just say that you budget at the fund level for all the funds? That doesn't prevent you from still budgeting by department, but it's just not a, it's not a level. I know, Joyce, do you have some thoughts on that?
Just my thoughts is from department to department. In my history, if I would have tried to move anything out of police, that wouldn't have gone over well anyway. But this issue with your general admin then, that you, and I understand why you put that budget in the general administration. So was that also the salary adjustments for your water, your other employees, and then did you have to go to council because it's to a different fund? So trying to understand how that worked.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, we actually budgeted the water differently. So we didn't include everything. We only included the general fund component of the new pay plan, those different, you know, the it was a kind of a flat amount. It was an estimate of what the impacts would be of the implementation of the pay plan. So, the water utility was not impacted by that. So there wasn't a transfer to the water utility for increased salaries and wages related to the implementation of the pay plan for the water utility that was budgeted in the general fund. We budgeted the water fund separately.
So when mayor and council then approved the new pay plan, essentially, they approved then the movement of that capacity to the departments.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, they approved the new pay plan. They approved the budget for the additional capacity, but there was an awareness and an understanding when that approval and that adoption was made of the budget that we didn't exactly know what the final amounts were going to be or how each department might be impacted through the implementation of the pay plan.
Okay. I guess we're still a little fuzzy on the lowest level of budgetary authority and all that, but you know, if you guys are obviously, I understand that most places don't budget by department because they're usually budgeting by at a program level. Like in City of Tucson, we didn't. You, in the general fund, you were budgeting, even though you budgeted to the department level, but you still kind of consolidated it to a higher level when showing it in the budget and stuff like that. But so, okay. You have a couple comments? All right, go ahead.
When it says prepare a budget in accordance with GFOA best practices, are 6.1 through 6.7 those best practices?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Miller, yes. Those are the best practices from GFOA.
Are there any others?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Miller, I believe there are other best practices. I don't believe that's an exhaustive list. Those are kind of the main ones. Yes.
And then the final question is one substantive change, it seems, is crossing out multi-year fiscal planning.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, could you repeat that question?
Yeah, I'm curious. It says in some of the language that was deleted for 6.7, it says use strategic multi-year fiscal planning. With the new language from 6.1 to 6.6, would that be encapsulated in that? Or is that something we want to do?
I don't know that we're going to change anything from a process standpoint from what we've been doing. And we do utilize the budget. It is a multi-year planning process. We do, we do a 5-year forecast, which I believe is handled in a separate part of the policy. So, or a separate policy. So, so I think the answer to the question is yes. Does it need to be delineated again? I'm not sure. I'm open to that, I guess.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other comments on the annual budget process? It's all quiet. We'll move on. were there any changes to the strategic long-range financial planning? Any discussion in that area? Move on to the fiscal monitoring and reporting policy. Any discussion or changes there?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, if you just bear with me for a second. For some reason, sure. I've been locked out of my computer. And so I want to review. Okay, thank you. No changes to the fiscal monitoring and reporting are recommended.
Okay. We'll go to the next, banking and investment. Any changes or discussion there?
Yeah, so here we had a couple what I would couch as minor changes. One of the bullet points under 5.4 says proof of stated registration. There's some additional language there, some additional registrations that were basically requiring the authorized financial dealer institution that would be handling our investments on our behalf. We're requiring some additional registrations of them. And then we added a bullet there, a statement of adherence to the Code of Professional and Ethical Standards. As described by the CFA Institute, so that those were kind of the major changes related to that policy. Scrolling down, let me see if there's anything. I don't think there's anything else that really changed with the investment policy.
I do have one question on that bullet list, and thank you for making some of those changes. I think it'll be helpful when you do go out for another RFP. Most of the investment managers are really national or international that you would get. Have you had trouble getting audited financial statements? Because I do see that's one of the items you would ask for.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, we actually haven't gone out to bid since I've been a part of our contract here. So I could see where that might be problematic because I know with certain bidders that, you know, if they're not public or whatever, they don't want to necessarily disclose that information. So that could be a challenge, but we'll see. That remains to be seen, I guess.
Okay. Capital expenditures improvements. Any changes there?
So, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, so that's, I think I highlighted on the major changes at the last meeting. really changing capital asset, the capitalization threshold from $5,000 to $25,000. Commissioner Garland wanted some exception language in there for grants in case there was a federal or state grant that required a $5,000 limit or a different capitalization limit or threshold, which I thought was fine. I had no issue with adding that exception language to that definition. And then the capital project, you know, what we're talking about there are projects that land on the 10-year CIP for the town, increasing that threshold from $50,000 to $150,000. Now, all of those capital projects would, by definition, be included in as a capital asset because they'd all be greater than $25,000. So, or multiple capital assets because it could be a combination of different assets that that exceed that $25,000 threshold individually, but $150,000 in the aggregate. So I hope that that makes sense.
That was a little confusing when we, if you're going out and you build a shed that's $100,000, are you going to put that on your capital asset register?
Mr. Chair, members of commission, yes. It would be a new asset. We would include all of the costs that would be necessary to get that shed up and going and operational, and capitalize that building or that structure.
So I see where you're confused, Mike, because you're saying, is that a construction project? I mean, it could be.
Right.
Or if it's a construction project, then it wouldn't meet the threshold.
$25,000 is usually on equipment. So if you had a $100,000 project that you're doing and you went and bought $50,000 of equipment, sure, you would capitalize the equipment. But I guess the whole reason, because normally when you have CIPs and you get through those, you capitalize them and make assets where they're built. But you're saying that if it's under $150,000, we're not going to bother. We're just going to expense it. So to me, unless you're buying some other specific asset, it's I don't know if you're accomplishing anything.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, just to be clear, it would be capitalized. It would be greater than $25,000. It just would not meet the threshold to be on the 10-year CIP. So the 10-year CIP is a planning document. It's not a capitalization document. It's strictly a planning document to see what major investments the town needs to make over the next 10 years that are significant, that are, you know, that visible type projects that the community ought to be interested in because it's requiring a lot of their tax resources to accomplish. So it's really just, it would be excluded from the list, but it would still be capitalized. It would be greater than the $25,000. It just would not qualify to be on the CIP, the 10-year CIP list. So hopefully that makes sense and clarifies things.
Are there any assets that you have capitalized in the past that you were going to write off because of this change in your level?
If Mr. Chair, if I understand the question correctly, if the level had changed, there's not necessarily assets that we would write off. I think we talked about this at the last meeting, if I'm understanding the question correctly. There's kind of two approaches for handling the transition from the capitalization threshold from $5,000 to $25,000. One is to simply write off those assets that no longer meet that $25,000 threshold. The everything from the $5,000 to $25,000. Or $25,000 or less that are still remaining on the capitalization list, those would be written off even if they were not fully depreciated. The other approach is to actually depreciate those assets over time, let them fully depreciate until their net book value reaches zero, at what point then you would scrub the list and write them off at that point in time, and there would not be a loss reported on the town's financial statements. And I think that's probably the approach we would take, is to actually phase this in over time so that the threshold, if approved, the threshold would increase immediately at the beginning of next fiscal year. But those assets that are beneath that threshold would continue to depreciate, that still had a net book value of greater than zero, would continue to depreciate over time until they reached that net book value and were fully of zero and fully depreciated, at which point in time we would scrub them off the capital asset list.
Have the accounting rules changed from the perspective of changing an accounting estimate or changing an accounting principle? Because I know we went through this, but I went through it a long time ago, and we had to do a change to net assets on your financials, and have an entry on the note. So has that changed?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, no. There is a change, a new GASB that's coming up that deals with a change in estimate or principle and how that's disclosed. Prior period adjustments are going away moving forward. However, this would not necessarily be a change in estimate, I'll say, especially no impact to net position if we let those assets fully depreciate to zero and had until they had a net book value of zero, that there would be no impact to the net position of the town, no change in what the net position would be over time, because the only change would be moving forward. So it'd be a prospective change; it would not be a retroactive change. Now, if we decided to write those assets less than $25,000 off at the beginning of this upcoming fiscal year, that would have an impact to net position, because we would essentially, all those assets that had a net book value greater than zero, that would be a loss to the town. So we'd be expensing that in that year. So,
have you just discussed any of this with your auditor?
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, yes.
Okay.
So they are supportive.
As long as they're, well, I think it's a good move to do. It's just how you handle it. And of course, if they're happy with it, then that's fine. Move the question. Go ahead.
I do. So on all the assets that, and I'm going to call them assets because they're still tangible, that are under your limit, do you have and other inventory tracking, because you don't have a policy on that. So what I'm concerned about is you do have a lot of items that are well under that limit, and how are you tracking them?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, so what you're talking about, I think, is typically considered more like inventory or a minor asset. And we do have a minor asset line, but we haven't historically capitalized those minor assets. We budgeted them separately, and we have not inventoried them. So, to my knowledge, I'm not aware of any inventory that's been done for minor assets. So that minor asset category would necessarily, with the proposed change, would necessarily increase. Because you would be, you'd be capturing more. Right now, the minor assets, I believe, are from $1,000 to $5,000 is what we would consider a minor asset. Well, now that limit would grow from $1,000 to $25,000. So we would be capturing more in minor assets, but I believe at the last meeting, I did show an analysis, in terms of total assets of the town. We're really dealing with something that's really pretty insignificant from a dollar threshold standpoint in terms of materiality. So when you look at total net position and total capital assets, this change would have a pretty minor impact. We're still going to capture all of the major stuff that would be impactful to the town.
I certainly understand that you're getting the major cost, and those other items aren't affecting any of your financials because they are more nominal. But there is something that you – so if you're not tracking, I'll just use computers as an example, because usually they're under the threshold. there's still taxpayer dollars that are being put into equipment and or other inventory that's being utilized. So are you saying there's no tracking of them?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I'm not aware of any tracking of computers unless they're, you know, I guess the exception would be stuff that's greater than $5,000, like the MDTs that our police utilize. Those are ruggedized computers, so they do cost more. They're over the $5,000 limit. So those are capitalized currently, and they're tracked. But moving forward, we wouldn't necessarily do so.
See, I would think for all those items that are above, was it 1,000 that you, that go from 1,000 up to $24,999, understand you're not going to have a value for that on your financial statements. But I think from an internal control perspective, I think most places would want to have those. They may be tracked at the department level so that if something gets broken and they have an inventory of it and they take it off the inventory, there's no financial impact. But it's more of a control of your equipment. And that might be something, too, that you want to discuss with the auditors from an internal control procedure.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I can have that discussion with our auditors, certainly.
Okay. Shall we move on to 1.6 PSPRS pension funding?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, we're planning to have a separate item on this. I know we discussed at the last meeting bringing this back, having discussion, potentially going through some scenarios with the pension modeler that the actuaries put out for the plan. That modeler has not been updated, so it's really utilizing our most current modeler is utilizing information based upon the 2022 actuarial evaluation, not the 2023. Now, with that said, I did receive an email from PSPRS on Friday saying, please register if you want the new updated modeler. So I know that they're working on it, and it should be available soon, and I'm hoping to bring that back at the next meeting. With that said, I'd like to discuss some real high-level changes that we're kind of kicking around. I know with the what that basically looks like in a nutshell is so currently we are, and I think I mentioned this at the last meeting, we're at 95% funded. We've got a $4.3 million, this was as of June 30th, 2023, we have a $4.3 million unfunded actuarial liability as of June 30th, 2023. We budgeted and are in the process of making $2.5 million in additional contributions to pay down that $4.3 million unfunded actuarial liability, which leaves about $1.8 million, all else considered equal. And we don't know, there could be some different factors that might change that number a little bit, but I believe it's going to be around $1.8 million at the end of this fiscal year. So looking forward to next fiscal year, one of the changes that we're kind of bumping around is looking at our ASRS, and I realize that these are two really different plans, but ASRS and PSPRS, and looking at what the employee and employer, because it's split 50-50, looking at the total contribution to ASRS is. So that's roughly a little over 24%. It's about 12% split 50-50 between employee and employer. And looking at that and moving forward, saying, okay, what if we started contributing 24% to PSPRS? And that's really our baseline moving forward. So instead of looking at PSPRS from the standpoint of we're going to contribute the normal cost rate that's recommended by the actuaries, and then we're going to contribute an additional amount of $2 million or $2.5 million or whatever that amount is to pay down any sort of liability. Looking at it from a rate standpoint, really trying to smooth that over time, with the baseline being that we will not ever contribute less than what we're contributing to ASRS. So what that would look like would be, again, we're roughly a little over 24% to ASRS. The employee contribution to PSPRS is fixed at 7.65%. So the employer contribution moving forward, that baseline would be roughly around 17%. Hopefully that kind of makes sense to get to the 24% total contribution. Now we have, and I've been working on some different scenarios, even not utilizing the modeler, of looking at, well, what if we contributed, trying to increase our employer contribution and pay down that liability even a little bit faster, increasing it to maybe 20% or 25%, so that total employer contribution or total contribution is even a little bit higher than that. But the baseline year over year would be with the employee contribution, it would be equalized to what we're contributing for ASRS. So that's just, a thought that we're having, trying to look at balancing this out over time so that we're not having these significant extra contributions, but also staying close to 100% funded, because we don't want to keep digging, don't want that hole to get deeper and deeper and end up in a position where we're significantly underfunded again moving forward. So those are some thoughts. Again, those are really broad-based, high-level. Hope to bring some more information back to you at the next meeting on that.
So I really think that you're doing a great job trying to keep this plan, PSPRS, under control, and I know how difficult that is. Have you, before you make a decision on that, have you looked at, I know you're going to be coming back with a forecasting, have you looked at what that impact would have on your general fund for the future before you make any decisions? Because one concern that I have is, I know with the income tax changing at the state, there is going to be a reduction of state shared income tax. So before you make any decision, I would just recommend that you look at it in a long term before.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, yeah, that we are absolutely doing that for sure. We've got our forecast for state revenue sharing over the next five. Again, we do a five-year forecast. So we've got the state revenue sharing estimates that we're working with. We actually project over the next couple years there's going to be a decline in state revenue sharing. So we've got that factored in. We're working through what that might look like, again, in the five-year forecast, trying to make sure that everything stays balanced. Prioritizing understanding that there's a multiple number of needs that need to be addressed, especially on the capital side. And so we're trying to work through that and balance everything moving forward.
So I have a twofold question on the PSPRS rates. So you said the employee portion is 7.65, so I'm wondering how you came up with that contribution. And you're saying that you want the overall to match ASRS. So I'm assuming that's also a town policy, because I know the county doesn't do that. So I'm just curious where, how you guys decided on those numbers.
Yeah. Chair Mason, Vice Chair Carr, I think we don't currently have a policy that states that we're going to match. And I think that would be the iteration that would come before you in April. Is that policy language that would say that we want to, that would be the again, and it's not that we're going to match it, it's going to, that would be kind of the baseline. So we would look at additional contributions again, but it'd be more percentage based rather than dollar based. Obviously those percentages have a dollar impact, we understand that, right? Regarding the 7.65%, That's written into the PSPRS plan, and for Tier 1 and Tier 2, that they are fixed at, the employee is fixed at that 7.65%. Now, Tier 2, it used to be, I believe, 11.65% for certain members of Tier 2. And then that went before the courts, and the courts determined that that was actually a reduction in benefits to those employees, and they brought it back down to 7.65%. So that's a level that is actually written into the plan and has gone before the courts and been challenged. But that is the employee rate for Tier 1 and Tier 2, and there's not really anything that we can do on that front.
So how do you decide what your amount is now? Because you're saying you're not doing the 24% now, but you're thinking about, so what are you doing now, percentage-wise or dollar-wise, it sounds like?
Yeah, so good question, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Carr. So what we're doing currently, and it's iterated in the current or enumerated in the current policy. So the current policy says we're going to pay the normal cost rate, which in the current year, fiscal year 24, is 11%. And then we're going to contribute an additional $2.5 million on top of that, which we're doing on a quarterly basis. So so that is, it's a combination of the normal cost rate plus an additional contribution at a fixed amount. And I guess, what we're kicking around as the change moving forward is we would not do a fixed amount moving forward. It would all be percentage-based.
Started out doing percentage, and then we went to fix, and now we'll go back. Well, we just have to see what the impact will be, because the one bad thing about this is if the assumptions keep changing, it doesn't matter. Well, what we try to do, we're going to end up probably having to throw extra money in, because we just don't know when the assumptions will change and how much of an impact it will be.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission, the difficulty with PSPRS or with pensions is that you're always trying to skate to where the puck is going to be. And we don't know where the puck is going to be, because you're absolutely right. There are a number of assumptions that are included in there, whether it's the assumed earnings rate, or it's the payroll growth assumption, or it's mortality rates. There are all kinds of different assumptions that the actuaries utilize to kind of come up with their liability. And also, additionally to that, they make assumptions based upon average retirement dates for employees and how long they're going to be in the retirement system and the plan and so forth. So it is one of those difficult things, and we do receive the information kind of on the tail end of the fiscal year. So the fiscal year is June 30th, and we don't receive the updated actuarial report, because they have to have time to do their calculations, computations, until roughly mid-December of the following year. And then we're developing a policy for literally the year after the year that we're in. So they're always kind of a little bit behind and trying to figure out what impact and whether you're doing enough or not.
Okay. Any other comments on PSPRS? If not, we'll move on to 1.7 revenues. Any changes or comments or discussion on that policy? All right, we'll move to 1.8 expenditures. Any changes there?
Just one quick thing, going back to 1.1-7 revenues. Mr. Chair, there was a question as to unpredictable revenues. I think one of the commissioners had an issue. What's an unpredictable revenue, and one example of what that might be? So I did include an example of an unpredictable, what I would consider an unpredictable revenue, and that's construction sales tax. That's something that that we try to predict, but we really don't know, because it's dependent upon major projects in the town and the impact that they have on our revenue stream there. So and the timing of those projects, certainly. So I would consider that as unpredictable. So I utilize that as a just as an example there, but no other changes to that policy.
Okay. 1.8 expenditures.
Yeah, no changes to that policy, Mr. Chair.
Okay. 1.9, debt.
Again, no proposed changes to that, Mr. Chair.
I had one, I think, where we were talking about, I think in the policy now, it talks about if your debt service is, well, your pledged revenue has to exceed 3 times your debt service for that particular year. And I went and used the information from the CAFR. I used what the pledged revenue on the excise tax, and that came out to be about 25, almost 26%. And I asked the question there is do you think that's too high, too low? Because I guess the concern that I'm raising here is that all of our debt is paid as you go, and that puts a burden on the general fund, of course. So if we end up having, you know, a bad year, obviously we have good reserves, but, you know, if we're paying 4 or 5, or if you're going to be issuing more debt and so forth, maybe there should be some kind of an indicator that says before we issue this debt, maybe we should be looking at some other revenue source before we do that. So that was my thought in this thing is this, it's not meant to be a hard line, a hard figure to go by, but just something that says, you know, we're starting to pay more and more and more debt service out of our general fund, and maybe we should look for something else or additional revenue.
Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I'm open to suggestions as to what that might look like, proposed verbiage. I would say in response to that, we are one of our strategic plan items in the current strategic plan is to actually look at additional revenue sources and streams and diversification. It's kind of a standard one, and that is something that that's in process. So because we do know that we have needs moving forward and so forth, so that might require additional debt issuances, you know, I'm open to some suggestions there. I think from my standpoint, the key issue is bond rating, because that really encapsulates if the bonding community feels that our credit is at a very high level, which they obviously do with us being rated AA+. If that starts being negatively impacted, to me, that's a big red flag that we've assumed more risk and debt than we probably ought to. So, broad picture, broad base, that would be my response to that. But again, I'm open to some different ideas there.
As I was looking, if this indicator would hopefully start telling you that, you know, the possibility of being downgraded or something could be a factor. So you don't want to wait for that to happen. And so that's just my thoughts, that having something that tells you, are we paying too much debt out of the general fund or not? And because that pledge revenue you're using is also the same revenue that you're paying everything else out of. So if you had a downturn, you're going to have to pay your debt. You cannot pay your debt. So that means you have to start making other reductions in the general fund. And that, you know, that's my thought process there. So in this particular, using these numbers, 25% of your pledged revenue going toward debt payment, is that fine? Is that too low? Or you know, I guess I don't know from your perspective what you would think would be becoming to a red line that where you were paying too much debt service out of the general fund.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I think right now I'm comfortable with where things are because we have not been downgraded. With that said, I think in our ACFR, in one of the statistical section tables, we do report debt service as a percent of non-capital expenditures. And I think that might, you know, now that's on the, I think the problem with that metric is that it is kind of a trailing metric. It's in arrears. It's not a leading metric. But I think that might be something that might be a better way to handle the concern, because you're looking at debt service and its percentage of your operating expenditures, and maybe that, you know, maybe an upward limit on that might be the way to might be a better way to handle it, even if it is a projected number where you're utilizing budget information, budget numbers, or whatever, trying to get to that calculation. I realize it's not going to be an exact number because everything would be kind of forecasted, but if you I think currently we're a little over 7% last fiscal year, maybe that upper limit is 8 or 9 or 10% or something. You don't want to exceed that amount where it's having in proportion to your operating costs, it's a significant, having a significant pulling resources away from your potential operating costs of being able to run the town and function and provide services. So just a thought there.
I guess we can discuss to see. I mean, coming up with something, I guess, is the point, whether it be based on the revenue or based on other basis. But I think having something that starts telling you that we may be having an issue that we have to deal with. Just one thing, a minor thing, going back to PSPRS, we said, I'll cover it later on in another policy, so never mind, go ahead. So I guess we're done with debt. Any other? Okay, fund balance.
So on fund balance, really the changes are in relation to the table. So there are a couple questions regarding the unassigned fund balance in the general fund. And these were really left over from earlier iterations of the policy. There were questions as to why they're even in there, and so I just scrubbed them all out because I kind of took the position that they didn't need to be in there. Things like, trying to remember now, I think one of them was, unemployment claims and things of that nature just didn't need to be in there. And then I believe, Chair, you had a question or a concern about the Community Center Fund. I believe I had that as committed. And you thought that would be better reflected as assigned, and I had no issue with changing that designation to assigned. And those were kind of the main changes there. So I don't believe any of those are too significant, but I would couch all of those as being pretty minor.
Thank you. All right, so I did have one question, particularly on that table, and thank you for taking those two items out because I just didn't understand it. The bed tax collections you have as assigned. So I'm trying to understand, or unassigned. So let's say you bring in $5 million in bed tax collections. Are you saying that automatically that goes to unassigned, or you... Isn't it utilized as a local revenue anyway to manage through things? So I need a little bit more explanation of that.
Sure, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland. So the history on bed tax collections is the town used to actually have a bed tax fund, and then that fund was eventually folded into the general fund. There are statutorily required utilization of your bed tax that it has to be utilized for tourism type purposes. Not all of it, but a percentage of it does certainly. A minimum that you have to require with to apply or comply with statute. And so, again, this is one of those that I would be we don't in the financial statements in the ACFR. We don't set those resources aside and separately track them as restricted or assign them for a particular purpose. They all kind of naturally just roll into the unassigned fund balance. So I think that's what the table is trying to just make clear. But with that said, I'd be fine with even deleting that one as well, because again, this one's kind of a carryover from prior iterations of financial policy and how we dealt with those resources historically. So
So with the state statute on the bed tax collections, and it's a high percentage, do you annually spend it, or do you spend more of that? Because then I would start to think that maybe some of that bed tax collection has to be restricted or committed.
I would say the only amount that needs that would need to be restricted or committed, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I would say the only amount that needs to be restricted or committed would be the amount that we didn't spend that would have to be spent in accordance with state statute. And that has not been the case. We've always exceeded the state statute requirements for bed tax and funding tourism-related activities in the town. So that has not been an issue. And to the extent that that we continue to do so, then again, what we're talking about here is not the amount that is statutorily required to be spent on tourism. What we're talking about is the residual that that when we've already met our requirement there from a statutory standpoint.
Then I would recommend you just eliminate it from the table. Otherwise, it kind of raises questions to that state limit.
A question that I had on the use, it says use of fund balance, and you have the old wording was fund balance shall be used only for emergencies, non-recurring expenditures. I guess my thought there was, especially the last couple of years, you guys have basically budgeted the use of fund balance for specific things. So should there be some kind of a exception in there or change, or do you think that that's already incorporates the fact that you do actually budget fund balance?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, and Commissioner, that's a good question. So over the last couple years, we have budgeted a use of fund balance. That use of fund balance, if you look at the budget, has all been 100% has been transferred to the capital fund. So it's all been utilized for those one-time purchases or capital purchases that the town has. If we hadn't made those transfers, there would not have been a budgeted use of fund balance. And so I believe we've been operating well within the bounds of current policy, and I don't believe that there's a change that's necessary here.
Okay, thank you. Any other discussion on fund balance?
Okay. I have one more.
Go ahead.
Sorry. So I was looking for the policy on when council would use their reserve, that 30% reserve. Usually that would be part of your fund balance as to when, and I think that's what brought it up, Mike, when you said, how they've been using fund balance. But is there a specific policy on when that 30% is used that maybe should be in here?
We discussed that previously, and if this has been designated as a rainy day fund, then I think the GASB's require that you give specific reasonings for what you would use it for. Technically, this is the reserve is not a stabilization fund, or it's not. It's just saying that mayor and council wants to have a certain percentage as their fund balance. So because it's a mayor and council directive, that's why it's committed. But it still doesn't hurt to have to realize when would you use that. But
yeah, Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I would say the use is dictated by policy 3.0, the use of fund balance, which says it shall be used only for emergencies, non-recurring expenditures, or major capital purchases that cannot be accommodated through current year savings. Should such use reduce the balance below the appropriate level set by the objective of the fund, restoration recommendations will accompany the decision to utilize said balance. So I think that hopefully captures the use of what could drop, because the 30% is a target as included here on 1.0. So if we did drop below 30%, then we would bring back recommendations. But the reason for dropping below 30% would be guided by 3.0. So hopefully that makes sense.
Well, then if I go down to 6.0, which is your utilization priority, it sounds to me like the last thing that you would be using would be your unassigned fund balance. So you would use up that 30% and then eat into the unassigned if things got really rough. And there may not be dollars to put back into your 30%.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, I'd have to think about that one. Because I think policy 6.0, the utilization priority, is not necessarily contemplating the 3.0. I don't believe that they're complementary type policies. I believe that the idea with 6.0 was just trying to and I understand your point. So I'd have to think about that one. The utilization priority was trying to think of, not necessarily trying to think about digging into the committed the 30% first and foremost, and then leaving. Obviously, you would have a challenge there with your unassigned, because you wouldn't have any unassigned left. So that would be a problem. So I can understand that point. So let me. Think about that one and noodle on that one a little bit as it relates to the general fund specifically. I don't believe there's a, you know, because the 30% reserve really just applies to the general fund specifically. So all the other funds would not necessarily be impacted by the potential intersection of policies 3.0 and 6.0. So really it's the general fund. So let me think about that one a little bit as to what that might look like.
I think that would be really helpful. One of the things that bond rating agencies do look for is if you do have some kind of stabilization fund, particularly if we do go into another downturn in the economy. We already know we're going to have some issues when it comes to state income taxes, which has a large impact. So we may just want to rethink some of the fund balance. I would appreciate it.
Any other discussion there? Okay. We'll go to internal controls.
Mr. Chair, no changes to the internal controls.
Does the internal control policy talk about the assets under your capitalization rate?
No, there's not a policy in the internal control policy as currently written or drafted that really deals with the capitalization.
I'm wondering if we should have something in there that covers the 1,000 to just under the capitalization level from the viewpoint of who's responsible, who should be doing something, should there be inventories, you know, whatever. That's been kind of the policy in the past from other places I've been. So just a thought there. Anything on grants?
Mr. Chair, no changes to the proposed grant policy.
Okay. None? Okay. K, accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. Any thoughts there? Oh, go right ahead.
I'm sorry. So why are you wouldn't consider any grants under $15,000? What is there a reason why that number?
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, not really. It's kind of an arbitrary and capricious number. With that said, I'm open to suggestions on that. But typically what we've seen is that grants that cost $15,000 that are federal grants and awards, there's so many hoops and reporting requirements to jump through those that it costs more to administer the grant than it's worth even receiving and accepting that award. And so that's really what we're trying to prevent is the small $5,000 grant that the police get or $10,000 award, and then you have to do quarterly reporting and all kinds of different compliance requirements and things. And for an award of that, for such a small award, it costs more to keep up with the compliance and administer it than it's worth to the town. And so the taxpayer literally receives no benefit literally no benefit to that award.
And the last and final, accounting, auditing, and financial reporting. Any discussion or proposed changes made there?
Mr. Chair, yeah, no changes proposed to that policy.
So I guess moving forward, what will happen is at our next meeting, we'll put all these together again and do one last look at it and make a recommendation to council from that point.
Mr. Chair, that's correct, and it doesn't necessarily have to happen at the next meeting. It might happen at the next couple meetings because we still have to really rinse through the PSPRS policy, make sure that everyone's kind of comfortable with that direction moving forward. And you know, I think there are some changes in here that, you know, the verbiage and whatever is going to be important. The proposed policies and changes moving forward are going to be, you know, and I'll just say, appreciate all of your the commission's time, effort, in reviewing the policies and making recommendations. It's critical that we have good, sound financial policies for the town because they provide the guardrails for us to operate and function financially in a safe and prudent manner. And so this is really important work that you're doing. I know it can seem tedious and not all that fun, but certainly appreciated by myself and our team. Thank you.
Thank you. Go ahead.
All right. Just one item. Because you can make a policy for many different things, but I didn't see anything for cash management. Have you considered a policy for cash management as far as, because I know you've got cashiering stations all over, you have employees that bring in cash, you know, they may be, you know, not very large dollar items, but I would think a cash management type of policy would be helpful too.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Garland, that's certainly something that we can take a look at and propose at the next meeting.
Any last-minute comments? Okay. Do we have a council liaison comments since Mayor Winfield's not here? Okay, we'll move on. No. Adjournment. And for adjournment?
So moved.
And do I have a second?
Second.
Second. Okay, so we have a motion to adjourn from Commissioner Carr, a second from Commissioner Miller. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Passes unanimously at 5:28. Thank you.